The Board of Directors of the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority encourages the public to attend monthly business meetings, as well as any special meetings or workshops of the board. The monthly business meeting agenda dictates time for public comment on agenda items and other issues of concern. Rules of conduct: all cell phones, pagers, and other mobile communication devices must be turned off or silenced for the duration of the meeting. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment. Refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. Refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any type of disturbance involving unwelcome physical contact. Be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussions. The roll call, Cameron Gogas. He is absent. Director Carlton.
Here.
Director Price.
Here.
Director Strahotskutter. And I am the chair, Tom Donahue. Okay, guest identification. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please give your first and last name? And so for the record, please.
My name is Kyle Hodson. Jim Hirsch.
Chris Rook.
Brooke Bilsey.
Miles Dodson.
Kevin Hardy.
Josh Hardy.
Thank you all. Okay, we'll go to the minutes of December 12th, 2023.
I should mention that remotely, Rochelle and Jeff Pippinger are both with us.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, December 12th, 2023. Are there any corrections, omissions, or that anybody noticed? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Director Price.
I'll move that we approve the December 12th, 2023 business meeting minutes.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried unanimously with one abstention. Or one.
One.
What's the term? Okay.
With four ayes.
Financial report, accounts payable for December 15th, December 20th, and December 31st. Are there any questions?
I have one question.
Yes.
Page 2 of 5, December 15th, Cherry City Electric Couple Tube Water Heater.
Yes, that was our water heater that we use for our process water out at Horn Creek. There is a neutralization tank that where chemicals mix with hot water, and that is the water heater that heats up that water.
Okay. Thank you.
I had a question on page 3, December 15th, we had Tillamook PUD for 2 streetlight installation. Do we normally do that?
Well, we requested an overhead light near our back gate because there was no light out there in this type of year. It's very hard to see. Rochelle, I'm not aware of a second one. Can you?
Well, it's from the 2 different accounts.
It's from water operating and sewer operating.
Yeah,
yes,
it was split.
Yes. So that, yeah, you take the back way into the yard on the asphalted road. You come to a gate into our yard that's locked. And we asked for a street light over that because we were having trouble seeing, and it's a security issue.
Okay, thank you. I did have on page 1, under Card Service Center, there was one entry called MSFT 2 for dry up printing or U printing. What's that mean?
MSFT is Microsoft.
Yeah. MSF.
Yeah, Rochelle, if you know the answer to that, please jump in.
Okay, Ann's correct. It is Microsoft. It's for our email services. And then U-Printing is for the business cards.
Okay, thank you. That's all the things I had. Oh, excuse me, I did have one other. Under Xylem Water Solutions on the 31st, we replaced startups at the airport lift station. What's that referred to?
Yes, we had two soft starts go out on...
What's a soft start?
A soft start is a way for a pump to be able to start without a lot of stress on the motor and without a heavy amp draw. And these soft starts allow these pumps to ramp up gradually, which preserves the pump and prevents wear and tear on the pump. Those soft starts actually on two of our three pump locations, two of them had gotten bad within a matter of weeks of each other. So very important pieces of equipment that we have to replace.
Okay, thank you very much. Were there any other questions about accounts payable? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Director Price?
I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for December 15th, December 20th, and December 31st of 2023.
I'll second.
We have a motion.
We have a motion.
Excuse me.
I thought I turned that off.
$5.
Sorry. Yep.
$5.
Yep. Who was it that used to do that?
Okay. We have a motion and a second for accounts payable for December 15th, December 20th, December 31st, 2023. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carried. I'd like to recognize we have three other new guests arrived. Would you be so kind to give your name for the record, please? Sir?
Steve Miller.
Kimberly Miller.
Gene Salerno.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to our general ledger fiscal year 23-24. Are there any questions about or discussion on the general ledger?
John, can I interrupt real quick?
Go ahead.
You and Tom, one of you needs to have your microphone on because the rest of us can't hear you.
Okay, I'll put it on.
I thought my microphone was on.
We're getting some... Yeah. That's why I turned it off.
Rochelle, can you hear me better now?
I can hear you, but somebody needs to turn down their volume on the laptop, too.
I'm working on that.
Excuse
me.
Yeah. You want me to mute mine, Don?
Well, you're running the show. I'll mute mine.
Oh, I thought you were running the show.
Yeah, you're running the show.
Oh, okay. I'm referring to the Teams meeting, excuse me.
Okay.
Any better, Rochelle?
Somebody still has volume on. You can only have one of you two can have volume.
Well, I'm turning mine off. There. Hopefully you can.
How about now, Rochelle? You know, just when I thought I had this thing worked out.
Rochelle?
Can you hear me, Rochelle?
I can hear you.
Okay. Good. Okay. Yeah. I think we're okay.
All right. There are no questions on our item 6B financial report, our general ledger. We'll move on to item 7, our manager's report.
Thank you, Tom. Most of the information I've shared up to now will be shared again in the unfinished business and new business sections. I do want to mention a couple of things. We have laid the groundwork, so to speak, for general public to attend our meetings remotely. And how we've got it set up is once we create the meeting, we put the meeting login information on our webpage, and we've been our advertisements, our public notice advertisements, are now identifying the ability for the general public to attend our meetings remotely by going to our website at the time of the meeting, and all they have to do is just log into Teams, enter the meeting information, and they can join our meetings that way. I'm still trying to refine this process. I'm not convinced that's the best way to achieve that goal, but it is a method that we tested, and it does work, although I see that it didn't generate any additional attendance remotely this meeting. I definitely think we're on the right track. So we'll continue to refine that process and get the word out and give people another avenue for participating in our monthly board meetings. Also wanted to say that, and Tom, you might be planning to mention this anyway, Tom's been working on a couple of new policies for us. One is in relation to HR-related things like workplace harassment, and also an investigation procedure for complaints of that nature, which our handbook says that we have, but we really didn't have anything very good in terms of a standalone policy. And I think you're planning, you'll be in a position to maybe share those with the group. I think the idea is, me and Sean have just given some preliminary feedback. I think the idea is to present it to the entire board for a more thorough review process.
That's correct. I am comfortable with the two drafts we came up, but we have a busy meeting tonight. And I wanted, as you mentioned, I wanted to make sure that the rest of the board had more time to really go through it. And there are two resolutions. As he mentioned, one is an investigative policy for any kind of complaint against the board, an employee. And the other is a statement of policy, a resolution to create a harassment and other inappropriate behavior policy to go into our regular employee handbook and for the authority in general. John? Okay.
Yeah, well, thank you, Tom. I the only other couple things I wanted to mention is Earthworks achieved substantial completion, which means that the system is in and functioning as intended for the new pipeline on Ruppel Avenue. Substantial completion was reached on December 12th, although they still haven't given us the required punch list that was supposed to accompany that notification of substantial completion. The punch list is basically just a list of things remaining. We met with the contractor, and myself met with the county road department on site several weeks ago, and to discuss the expectations for the road. All that's really left at this point is the restoration of the road and surrounding areas and supplying us with as-built drawings. Due to the weather conditions, this work has started, but due to the weather conditions, it's progressing more slowly than we had hoped. Just an update about that. Wanted to mention that one of our employees, Charles Conant, continues to pursue certifications. He passed another certification test in December, along with getting his Class B commercial driver's license.
All right. Pass on my personal congratulations.
Please convey our...
That was a productive month for him.
Congratulations.
So, he's working hard. So that's it for the manager's report, Tom.
Thank you, John. Move on to item 9, new business. We have a new...
Unfinished business, excuse me.
The Verizon cell tower proposal, John, how did that go?
Well, some of you got my latest email about that. A little disappointed. As you know, we were approached by a company that looks for locations for to install cellular phone towers. He's working for Verizon. He had contacted us with a proposal identifying our property, the wastewater treatment plant, located on Cape Kiwanda Drive, as a good location in their mind for the tower. Subsequently, we have indicated to them that we just don't really have the footprint on our property for this infrastructure. But at the board's request, I had reached out to this person to see if he would still be interested in a public meeting where we could invite more of the public in to give comments, ask questions, because even though we don't have the footprint for it, doesn't mean that some other property owner in the community doesn't. And, the benefit would be enhanced cell phone coverage for Verizon, which I think is a positive thing, but they need a place to locate this. My conversations with him were that he would be very willing to come and have those discussions with the public. And once I started to nail down the meeting and called him to confirm, he's done a bit of about face on me. He's indicated that, well, he's not willing to talk about the cell phone tower until they've located a location for it, and which is not what he told me initially. So he's now indicating that they are not interested in having a public meeting, at least not until they identify a new potential location to put the cell phone tower, which was confusing to me because we thought that this might be a way to help him do that. But he's backed out of it, and because of that, I don't think there's much more that we can do, not much more for us to discuss or facilitate in this regard. All right, so that's all I've really got to report. My hope was, as I was going to come to the board meeting and identify, confirm a date and time for this public meeting, and instead I'm coming to the board and telling them it looks like it's off the table.
So I think John is right that this is going to be a dead issue for us. And if he comes back at some time in the future and has another proposal, but it doesn't look like he's going to do that, maybe he'll have a site that's owned by someone else, and then they'll be the ones that can deal with it and set up a meeting or whatever direction they want to go.
Yeah. Director Price?
I agree. And now that you've done more thinking about the location not being really appropriate, I would suggest if he does come back and raise the conversation again that we urge him to contact the Chamber of Commerce or perhaps the CAC, because those are larger groups, and we have a mission. We provide water and wastewater systems. And so I do think a public meeting would be useful and interesting, and I would go to it, but I'm not sure if we're the right agency to.
Yep.
I think those other two groups might be more appropriate.
Thank you. Any other comments about the cell tower? Okay. We'll move on to 8B, Cape Kiwanda Water Main Valve Repair. That's coming up, what, tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Tomorrow at noon is when it occurs. So we're replacing a valve that unfortunately is located on North Cape Kiwanda Drive, right in the heart of some of our biggest commercial customers. And but it's a valve that's got to be repaired. It's a good time of year to do it. It's a good opportunity to do it because the road's already tore up with the work they're doing at the Pelican parking lot. so we wouldn't have to do any road construction, we wouldn't have to interfere with traffic. And we have been in continuous conversation with the impacted parties, most notably Nestucca Ridge Development, who owns a lot of those major businesses down there. We've been working with them. They've been very, very good to work with, very understanding and cooperative. So the notifications have all gone out. We've notified all the residents that could potentially be impacted.
How much time involved?
With the job?
Well, that, and how long would the water be out?
Well, the service outage is scheduled to begin at noon. We anticipate the service outage will be less than 2 hours and may be as little as 1 hour. But because we have to depressurize the water main in that part of town, the biggest issue and the biggest inconvenience for people is the fact that we're going to have to issue a boiled water notice. It'll be a short-term notice. It'll only be 18 hours, but nonetheless, it's you know, that certainly will have an impact on our customers in that part of town. But we're all geared up. We've done all the pre-planning and preparation we can do to make this go smoothly and to make sure that we can work quickly and efficiently. And I feel like we're ready, and that work begins at, well, the shutdown begins at noon tomorrow.
Okay. So that's good news. Looks like we'll just get her done.
I'll be happy when it's over.
Okay, we'll move on then to new business. We purchased a new truck.
Yeah, this is something that we have budgeted for. We are in need of a new work truck. We need to replace the 2008, I think I wrote it down here, I believe it's a Ford F-450. This is our workhorse vehicle. This is our biggest truck. It's our truck that has the crane on it. But it's also a truck that is on its last leg, and we need to find a replacement. And the quotes that we provided were for a comparable vehicle. There's three quotes there, I believe. Two are Chevys and one is a Ford. And our recommendation is that the board approve the purchase of the Chevy truck that is...
Which company?
Dick Hanna.
Dick Hanna, and it's the one for $157,000 and change.
The first one, isn't it?
The first one.
First one.
Oh, there it is. There it is. Yeah, $157,445.20. We like this vehicle not only because we've had almost all our fleet vehicles are Chevys. We've had very good luck with them. They've been good, reliable vehicles. We believe that this one fulfills our requirements in terms of function and features.
I was looking through both of those Chevy proposals. This one I noticed had an air compressor set up in it. Did it come with a welder too?
No, that's not included in the price. They were hoping to sell that to me, but it does come with a crane package that we feel we need, especially for our larger pumps over at Airport Lift Station. And it's got the 3/4 ton, it's the dually, it's.
Were you planning on adding those items later?
I don't think we have a lot of use for a welder. We might have use for an air compressor, but because we've got portable ones, we've been able to just put them in the back of the truck and take them with us on site. So I don't think that's necessary, but what is necessary is a robust crane system, and we believe this one has that. When you have a crane on one of these vehicles, it's just not the cost of the crane. Well, now you need the crane body. You need the support system in the frame and the structure of the truck to be able to support the loads that the crane is lifting. And that's one reason that a crane truck does add quite a bit of cost. We think this one fits our needs. It's the least expensive of the two Chevys, I believe. There is a Ford that is a little less expensive, we didn't feel as good about it just in the accessories and the features that came with the truck.
And John, I noticed, because I was looking at the difference in price, I noticed that the lift capacity on the Ford crane was much less than the lift capacity on the Chevrolet. And so while the Chevy does cost a little some more than the Ford, I'm assuming that you need that additional lift capacity for pumps and whatnot that you might need.
We do. And one thing to keep in mind is a lot of times the lift capacity is rated and what the crane can lift at normal crane length. But when the crane is extended, that's when the real test of the capability comes into play.
And that's that other measurement, the foot lift.
I believe that's it. And in most applications, we're going to have to extend that crane. And we need that extra oomph with that extension to get to some of our pumps and some of the locations where we have to work and where we will have need for it.
Okay.
I'm prepared to make a motion.
Director Price, go ahead on.
Any other? I'll move that we purchase the 2024 Chevy Silverado with the crane body for $157,445.20 as quoted by Dick Hanna Chevrolet.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to purchase a 2024 Chevrolet Silverado work truck at a price of $157,445.20. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, nay.
Aye.
Aye. We have four ayes. The motion is carried. Item B, surplus equipment declaration, Detroit 271 mobile generator.
Yes, we have got our new mobile generator. It was intended to replace this obsolete model. This is an old Army surplus unit. I believe somebody told me that the year on it was 1962, which... makes it really old, and it's required constant maintenance. Parts are very tough to come by, and it's never run very well. Very loud, and it's time to say goodbye to this piece of equipment. My understanding is that the board must declare it a surplus in order to sell it by silent auction. If there's somebody who's into this type of vintage equipment, this may appeal to them, but I think it'll be interesting to see if we get any interest in it on a silent auction.
It says this is a trailerable item.
It's got a trailer hitch, it's on wheels.
The 220 as well as 115 or?
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. Okay. Yes, but at this point it's slated to be replaced, and I would ask the board to approve its declaration of make a declaration that this piece of equipment is now surplus.
So, John, what would you start it out at for a silent auction? Are you thinking about a beginning bid?
Well, I'm thinking about, because when you do a silent auction, you pretty much go with the highest bidder, but you can start at a certain amount. It's kind of it could be potentially a museum piece, but on the other hand, My suggestion would be to require an opening bid that at the very least is comparable to what we could get for it as metal scrap.
And you would do that research when you were prepared?
Yeah.
We don't need to have that in motion.
Yeah, I determine what it weighed and try to make an estimate for that. It does have metal scrap value, but it would take, you know, a little bit of a guess and you know, to try to determine what that is. But I think we can make a couple of calls and come up with, you know, a reasonable estimate.
The current, well, I'm thinking about it, the current work truck, that's going to be a surplus item, too. Once the other is delivered, how long do you think that's going to be delivered?
It may take 5 or 6 months to get the next one. And unfortunately, we have to put a little money into the old one just to keep it running that long.
Okay.
But yes, it'll be 5 or 6 months. And once we get that vehicle, I will then come to the board with a similar request for that.
Okay. I would entertain a motion to declare this piece of, or this generator surplus.
I will move that we declare the Detroit 271 mobile generator as surplus equipment.
I second.
We have motion and second to declare our generator surplus. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. We have some interesting things going on with the BLM property trail behind our wastewater treatment plant. John, what's the score?
Well, as I think most of you know by now, that due to a local court decision, that recreational immunity is in peril in the state of Oregon. This has to do with municipalities or property owners who have trails,
recreational
type of trails that, you know, these trails may lead to the beach, they may take you to a lake, they may take you to a viewpoint. And because of this recent court decision, a lot of people are now closing these trails due to potential legal liability.
Can we just clarify, by the term local, we mean Oregon?
Yeah.
This lawsuit occurred in the city of Newport.
Newport, that's right.
It was not a Pacific City issue.
No, it's not. But it
affects statewide.
It does impact us in that we need to assess what that means for us and what kind of potential liability that could open up us up to. Now, this is a trail that was part of our RMPP lease agreement. It was one of the improvements that we committed to making to that property. That trail is in place, but because we don't have the funds or the manpower to maintain that trail, we have not been doing that. And because it hasn't been maintained, our insurance agent highly recommends that we consider closing the trail. Now, as I said, that you know, there is even my belief is I believe that most people believe is that the Oregon legislature will come through and fix this problem.
Yes.
But until they do, the question is do we feel like we can leave this trail open, understanding that somebody could make the same claim that they did against the city of Newport.
So, John, what do you mean that you would close the trail? Where would it be closed at, and could people come up around and still access it? Because I'm one of the people that walks that trail.
Well, and I've walked the trail too, and it's a nice feature. What it means is we essentially put up a sign on each end of the trail, because it's a loop, that would say something like, trail closed, use at your own risk. And that's essentially some of the signs that I've seen go up in other places.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that people can't use it. It's just that us as the caretakers are saying that this trail is closed, and if people are going to utilize the trail, they need to understand that they're doing so, you know, at their own risk.
And have you talked to our attorney and gotten some input from?
I have not. It's something I could do. You know, what I have done is I've looked toward what other people are doing. I've looked to what our insurance folks are recommending. I have not pulled our legal into that. It's maybe something that we should do, because I think the concern is if we were maintaining that trail, then we would be less exposed from a liability standpoint. But since we're not, that raises some concerns. And I can check with our legal folks and see what they recommend. Lawyers are very risk averse, and I'm expecting them to say to recommend that we close the trail until this gets settled, either in the courts or by the Oregon State Legislature.
John, I have a comment here and another concern. I read this pretty carefully for the public. It means that the immunity for people that have trails on their property, whether they're public or private, if someone can say something that it's like a recreational trail, well, that immunity is now gone because of this suit. My other concern is that we have a walking trail along the that'd be the northwest corner of our property that follows Cape Kiwanda Drive that the local residents right there use. That trail ends and walks right through our property when the gates are open, and people park their car there and use it as a trailhead and walk to the Cape that way. I think if we're going to consider this, we might also consider signing that particular trail there, because folks walk through the property.
Which,
yes,
specifically, which are you talking about at the back gate that goes into the?
Yeah.
It's the one that goes right behind the house.
That's the access to the, to the BLM property.
Yes.
That's the trail system.
Yes, this trail parallels Cape Kiwanda Drive. It's located right behind the backyards of the Dory Point folks.
Yes. Yes.
That's part of the whole thing.
Well, that was never identified as a trail. It's just become a trail.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that puts it in a different category. I don't know, but I'm guessing it probably
does. Well, what I'm concerned is they're walking across our property, and they're using that as a trailhead. If we're under possible liability, I think we at least ought to identify that with signage to.
Yeah.
It would probably be a good idea. And since we lease the BLM property, you know, it really doesn't matter where it starts from or terminates from. We're responsible. It's our responsibility.
Okay. Any other comments, Director Price?
I was at the County Road Advisory Committee meeting yesterday, and this exact same topic came up, because the county has a number of slightly improved trails that are on the list to get worked on, but there are more important things in the budget anyway, or now, but they are going through this very same discussion whether to put signage up to just say use at your own risk, or in their system they're opting to do exactly what we're talking about here, which is to post trail closed. Because if it's use at your own risk, you're still giving permission for people to use it at their own risk. But if you say trail closed, you're removing your own responsibility for anything
that might take
happen.
That might take a legal opinion.
So that's where I was going to go. I would urge a decision for us to make to close the trails, post in several places, because those trails are not just accessed in the obvious places. And before we take that action, to make sure that we run that past our legal advisors.
Absolutely. And I will just say,
especially with regard to language on the sign.
Yes, and that would be,
because we don't want to leave the door open at all.
Yeah,
to it being used.
And I think that would be a perfect role for a legal counsel to play. Most people are just posting signs with this type of language. They're not putting barriers across the trail. They're not doing anything like that. I'm not recommending we do that.
Right.
You know, anybody,
that's,
I mean, they could
like
just go 10 yards to the right or left and still get to it. So
the loop, the big loop, people access that from way up in the Stucker Ridge because there's empty lots in the Stucker Ridge and people cut through those lots and get onto the trail. I know, because I do that, and so does my walking group.
So we need more than one or two signs?
Well, if you want to cover all your bases.
Yeah, I think that's good feedback. I was not aware of that.
This is one of those things where we want to make every reasonable effort to have that notice.
And with the hope that this is just a temporary thing.
Right.
Well, legislature meets in February, so yeah. It's hard to say.
I think it's going to get fixed, too.
I think it will, but until it does, it's got a lot of people very nervous.
Yes.
Okay.
So I want to be sure I understand. I'll get clarification on signage and stuff from our legal counsel. Once I do that, is the board directing me to close the trail?
That's make a motion if you want one.
Okay. Are we going to close it or just say
close it?
Whatever the legal folks decide as proper signage.
Yeah, I think signage is a question that we can bounce off of them. I can bounce off, get a legal opinion on whether we should close it or not. I can just about predict our legal counsel will say to close it.
Could I make a motion that pending confirmation by our legal advisors, we close the trails?
That sounds like a good idea.
Okay.
So we have a motion.
I'll move that pending confirmation of this decision by our legal advisors that we close the trail accesses and other common entry points to the public for the time being on the BLM property.
Okay.
I'll second.
We have a motion and second to pending legal consultation for signage that we close our BLM property trail, and also the trail is going through our other property. Or our same property, different spot. Okay, we have all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. We have a unanimous decision. Okay, item D, Earthworks contract time extension appeal.
Yes.
We just got that.
We just got it this afternoon. I'm not prepared to discuss it. I don't know how you all feel, but.
Okay.
And?
I of course, we all got this very late in the game for
like
this meeting, like today at 1:30 or 2 o'clock for a meeting at 5:30. So it was received way too late for people to give it careful attention and the consideration that it really requires. I'm going to suggest, because of the importance of the issue, that we schedule a special meeting of the board for this discussion.
An executive session?
And since Mr. Howard says in the following in his letters, and I'm quoting, otherwise we just end up paying lawyers to get the same result, close quote, we might want to consider an executive session under ORS 192.6602H to consult with counsel concerning the legal rights and duties of a public body with regard to current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. So what that motion would do would say we schedule a special meeting and then it be an executive session with legal advisor present.
You have some thoughts, Sean?
Yeah. I'm not completely opposed to that, I guess, but are we under any kind of a time I mean, he didn't appeal in the required time frame. Is that correct?
He did not.
So we're not under any time frame to respond.
No. My concern is what I thought would be an appeal to our decision about a contract time extension. He has now pulled in concepts like liquidated damages into it, which I think is a separate issue that should be considered separately. The only concern I've got is that if there are the delays, liquidated damages are still accruing. And at some point in time, there's going to come a time where we can't pay him for any more invoices, pending an understanding of where that's going to land. Now, that could get to be a bit of a sticky situation.
How much is he accruing to, on a daily basis at this time?
$500 per day. But I think that if I think this is something that we should try to make a decision about as quickly as we can. So my recommendation would be is that if we have a special meeting, we try to be in a position to do it within a couple of weeks, as opposed to, you know, a time frame longer.
So we have a sizable group of people here that this affects directly. Mm-hmm. Would it be appropriate for you to explain to them what's going on?
Sure. If the board feels as though it's appropriate. Anne, what do you think? Does everybody feel it's appropriate?
I think that would be fine. I do want to point out, though, that item 10 on the agenda is guest questions and comments. And so
we're almost there.
We're almost there, and that might be the place to do that.
Same difference.
Okay.
Because I do think it's important that everybody understand the big picture. At the same time, this is an agenda item for the board's discussion and decision. So,
sure.
We have a motion still on the floor. You were recommending a special meeting and an executive session in reference to possible legal litigation.
Did you actually make a motion?
I didn't actually make a motion. I was explaining to you recommendation is that I make that motion, and that we have a decision on how we as a board will proceed. And then during guest questions and comments, John could give a more detailed explanation of exactly where we are. And
okay.
Because it is complicated with liquidated damages and all that.
Okay, well, let's go this way then. The item, agenda item, is to look at the a time extension appeal. And his comments just came early this afternoon. On the appeal itself, I suggest we table that and discuss it either at a special meeting or next month's meeting. So just table the appeal, and we'll move on to guest questions and comments.
I would prefer not to wait the whole month.
Yeah, I personally would not support that, because in the letter that we received, the appeal and the liquidated damages are all rolled into one in his view of it. And so I think that, and again, because the quote I read from the letter, there's an indication that there may be legal action. And I think both issues have been addressed in his letter. And so I think we need to go ahead with a special meeting before we make any decisions, or and if we table it to next month, we're just kind of kicking the can down the road, and this is a project we'd all like to see get finished up.
I agree.
Yeah, question. As I said, I feel like this is two issues. We need to decide
and
make a decision.
And he's rolled them into one with that.
I know. So, you know, the liquidated damages and the contract run times, they are related, but one is predicated by another. And so I guess my feeling is this is the time to consider his appeal for contract extension on its own, make a decision about that, not today, but at the meeting. And then wait to make a decision about liquidated damages until they stop accruing. And possibly have another special meeting to make a decision about liquidated damages and what may or may not be imposed. Okay. Does that make sense?
So you had made a comment, I can't find it now, it was in one of your emails. That you're, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so correct me if this is not accurate. You're not wanting, your recommendation would be to not grant an extension based on his appeal, but to at some point consider potentially a partial or not, or just consider whether or not we would cut back on some of the liquidated damages.
Well, what
rather than have an extension of the...
Yeah, well, my suggestion is because I think the messaging is important, and I think we've got a lot to not be happy with. And but because I did sense, some I don't want to call it sympathy, but I want to call it, a possible move towards some kind of leniency. If we were to apply that to a contract extension, we'd have to think about what that might look like. My thought is if there is any feeling from any board member that some leniency or some understanding based off of some circumstances that the contractor has cited should come into play. My feeling is that, well, I'm reluctant to cut him much slack with the contract runtime extension, but I'm also reluctant to, LDs could be a very large amount, and maybe that would be a time to take the high road and to not forgive the liquidated damages outright, but to potentially, if there is an inclination to show some leniency, this might be a way to do it, perhaps in what percentage of the liquidated damages we might impose. I was just suggesting that as a possible way to approach it. Now, if the board based off his appeal believes that his argument has merit, or it's not so cut and dried that there's some gray area there, then we could consider a contract extension. But just as I predicted, he's not very specific about what he's asking for.
Well, that's the other confusion I have, is that I don't see him asking for an extension. He's appealing
your earlier ruling.
He's appealing liquidated damages. We were asked to make a presentation or submit further documentation about why liquidated damages should not be assessed, but I don't see anything in here where he's actually asking for an extension.
Well, he had asked for an extension in this letter that was attached to his, and once he asked for that extension, this is the only time he used words that contractually I could understand, to where he's asking
that
for an extension of the contract.
Damages if you extend the deadline.
It would modify them, because if you extend the deadline, say for example you extended the substantial completion deadline, you would automatically be forgiving 30 days worth of liquidated damages. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so his first request that I could decipher as a request for a contract extension came as part of this letter. This is what I responded to with my denial of his extension request. He then followed up with a rebuttal, but the weird part about the rebuttal, at the bottom of it, it says, if you decide to not grant the contract extension, I would like to appeal to the board. Well, but the rebuttal seemed like his written appeal almost. And so now he's come up with something else that is now talking about LDs, but I don't think he's taken the contract extension request off the table by any stretch.
What are liquidated damages ballpark right now?
Oh, I would say north of 50,000.
So when this all started, and you know, we planned it so that he would get the work done when the weather, hopefully the weather was relatively good, and he started late, and we sort of forgave that and understood trying to get some materials, and we made some adjustment in the materials. I think that set the tone for him continuing to be behind schedule. And now the weather is horrible.
So let me get clarification for you. So what exactly set the tone for that we might have done?
I think when we let him get away with starting late, and then he changed some of the materials he was going to use.
We were contacting him once a week, asking.
Yeah, how did we let him get away with that?
Well, I'll admit, not let him get away with it. Well, I'll say he started late, did he not?
He did.
When the weather was good, and he had an opportunity to get much more work done during that period when there was nicer weather.
Which I think is the point.
Yes. And now, because he started so late, it has created a bigger and bigger problem.
Yeah, it's kind of compounded upon itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this brings us back to our item. Item D, which is Earthworks, the time extension appeal. What do you want to do?
Shall I proceed with the formal motion?
No, not yet. Hang on. I still have some questions. So this, the letter where he requests an extension, and I would use that term request haphazardly because he's really kind of demanding that we extend it. Is there in the contract, if an extension is sought, does it have a time frame as to what that extension is?
It does. It needs to be done within 30 days of the event that caused the delay.
And is there any language in the contract that in other words, does it define what a contract extension time period is, or is that up to him to ask? Like, can he ask for 30 days? Can he ask for 60 days? Can he ask for 90 days?
He can
ask for whatever he wants.
He can.
All right. So my issue is in what we think is his request for an extension. All it says is, due to material delays and asphalt paving requirements, this project must be extended. It doesn't say how long it should be extended for, and it's not a request. He's saying you have to do this, which pisses me off.
Well, so, and welcome to my world.
Right. So, you know, I don't think this is an extension request. He's saying it must be extended, but he's not saying, I mean, if I were going to, request something, I would say, hey, due to this, this, and this, I would like a 30-day extension or a 60-day extension. If we just make a decision based on this, there's no time frame to it, right?
There's no time frame, and because he hasn't specified a time frame, as I mentioned, if we're going to make a decision, that puts kind of the impetus on us to decide what that time frame might be.
Right.
I can tell you that he wants a contract extension until he gets around to finishing this job.
Well, good luck
with that. And if you need a contract extension because of paving problems, if the whole project had been done on time, we wouldn't have had the paving problems.
Absolutely.
So my feeling would be we reject the extension request.
Which I have twice, but...
And he's appealed it. Yes. I would say, I mean, to me...
So you're suggesting the board just confirm that we deny any extension of the contract.
Right. And,
we can go ahead and do that tonight.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then if we need to have an executive session or a special meeting on liquidated damages, then we can do that. But I don't see anything in here that makes me think that I'm inclined to grant an extension.
And you guys have been privy to a lot of conversation about this. Because I knew he was after an extension, and he finally said something that said the word. Although it's a little cryptic, he thinks that this is his request for a contract extension. In fact, he thinks his request for a contract extension came by merely telling me that there was a long lead time on parts, and I should have somehow read between the lines. I mean, that doesn't meet contractual muster for the type of notice you need for these situations. But you guys have read, you have read this this attached letter, the one that has those words on the
came
bottom.
Came today. The one that
you read my response to him, which resoundingly rejected that. And then he wrote a rebuttal to my rejection. I was tempted to do a rebuttal to the rebuttal, but I didn't. So I think you guys already know a lot of the background behind this and a lot of the story in terms of our frustrations about this contractor's performance. So, I would leave it up to the board. I do think that we have... whether we make the decision, the board rules on the contract extension or not, I do think we have a special meeting in our future. But do we feel as though that the additional, call it an appeal that we received this afternoon, has received fair enough scrutiny to make that decision now? I see it more trying to get off the hook for the LDs than talking about time extensions.
Well, he does say in the letter, would be entitled to an equitable adjustment of the contract time. So that, to me, is that the language you guys are seeing that is asking for an extension?
Well, I see that that's further language that talks about an extension.
I would be prepared to move that we deny any request for a contract extension.
That's my recommendation.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Is that a second?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
If she's making the motion, sure.
I'll move that we deny any request for a contract extension to Earthworks Excavation.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to deny the Earthworks contract time extension. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. All four directors in the aye.
And can we leave the idea of a special meeting
on the table?
Under executive session on the table? Yes. Is that generally... in terms of contract language and potential legal involvement and that sort of thing, is the board generally open to that? And then John could just go ahead and schedule it if we get to that.
I believe that that's a good idea when the time comes, but
right,
until we know how much liquidated damages we're talking about, how can we make an informed decision about what we're going to assess?
Right.
So... that means that he's got to finish this project before we consider anything having to do with liquidated damages, because liquidated damages will continue to accrue until that happens. The only thing I might throw out there as a caveat is I want to talk to our legal folks, because eventually he's going to send me an invoice that I'm not going to pay, because he's already accrued too many liquidated damages for me to pay him until we see where that lands.
Yes.
And I might be sympathetic to some leniency on that, because I do think that there are some delays that the world has introduced to us in the last few years that really suck. But the last thing I want to do is give them an extension now and not have these fine folks have a finished road in a year.
When you speak with our legal advisors, could you address the question of having a special meeting with them present for board discussion, and whether they think that that would be a useful tool at this point, or should come later, or possibly not at all? But
you're talking about legal counsel participation in an executive session?
When you talk to legal counsel now, bring up that concept of a special meeting under that ORS.
Okay. Okay.
To see, so that they know we're thinking of that possibility and whether or not they would recommend that.
Yes, and they've already participated in a couple of those in
some
the
of
past.
The discussion.
So
yes.
They're
familiar with
it. Yeah, they're familiar with it, but I'd be happy to do that.
They have a copy of the contract, I'm assuming.
Our legal doesn't yet. Until I've been able to quantify what we're being asked for and the potential for litigation, I haven't really gone to our legal group about this to a great extent yet, but they don't currently have a copy of the contract.
Didn't they look at it when we first got it?
They had one of their contract reviewers look at it, but that would be somebody different than potential litigation.
It wasn't in this context.
In this context.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I would just add that if and when we need to have that special meeting, that maybe it's a hybrid public meeting with option of going into an executive session, because I think it's fair to invite Bill.
Yes.
Bill Howard to that meeting.
Yeah. You have a special meeting and then recess for executive session and then resume activity for any further discussion and any vote.
Yeah.
Action can't be taken in the executive session.
Correct.
As a point of clarification, in that ORS, because it is an executive session and there's legal possibilities involved, the press can be invited as a representative of the public.
Can be present but cannot report.
Correct. But as a witness for the public.
In any executive session.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. Yeah. Okay.
So, Tom, I think Julie came in late and didn't introduce herself, and we need to add her to the record.
Excuse me.
Oh, I'm Julie Crone.
Thank you. So we have that for the record.
So are we done with that, then?
Yes, we are. Wow. That was an interesting
Good.
Discussion. All right. We're going to go now to item 10, guest questions and comments. First off, as a chair here, I'd like to welcome all our guests. Really nice to see you all, and I know you're all concerned about what we've just been discussing. So to give you a little background before we ask for your comments, John, can you kind of give us a little background of how this progressed?
Where we're at today?
Yeah. Well, starting from the beginning, when was the end of the most, what do they call it, it had to be mostly completed, what was the term?
Substantial.
Well, the contract has two contract run times with two contract deadlines. One is called substantial completion, which gives the contractor 90 days from the time the contract is executed to demonstrate substantial completion. Substantial completion means that in this case, the pipeline is installed, the service lines are done, the pipeline is in service, all our customers are utilizing the new infrastructure for its intended purpose. So we are at that point in the contract. The second contract time frame is, and it doesn't call it this exactly, I use this term because it's easier to understand, it's total completion, which needs to occur 120 days after the contract is signed. And that means that not only is the pipeline in and working, but the road's been restored. We've got our as-belts that he will owe us as part of this project have been delivered. And clearly, total completion is not done yet. The substantial completion expired on October 28th, and he did not reach, the contractor did not reach substantial completion. He says the 14th. I have it down as December 12th. So contractor was, I would call that, 6 weeks late reaching substantial completion. And total completion would have been if a, another month, so October 28th to roughly November 28th. And obviously total completion's not done either. And as you can see, the we're not entirely happy with the delays. We don't believe that the delays we're seeing are justified. We are, you know, we're trying to work through this with our contractor. And unfortunately, all of you are along for this ride. And we recognize that. We're sensitive to that. I do want to say that, as I've already had conversations with some of the folks here, that what you see on that road now is not what you're supposed to get, and not, I believe, not what you will get. It's just it's taking a long time to get the road fixed and restored to a point that you could claim it was comparable to original condition. We've got a lot of trench cuts in the road that haven't been paved, haven't been patched. All that's supposed to happen, but the catch-22 of this is that because the contractor took so long to reach substantial completion, we have now pushed, we are now into the winter weather part of the year, which is not conducive to asphalting roads. In fact, a lot of the asphalt companies aren't even running this time of year. And so in our mind, this was always supposed to be a summertime project for numerous reasons, not the least of which is Ruppel Avenue is located entirely within the Nestucca River floodway. Okay? So, you know, that's one reason. The other reason is we knew winter weather was going to come, and that was going to only exacerbate the problem. It was only going to cause additional delays with the road restoration. So we're very frustrated, as you can see. I know you all are frustrated. And, you know, we I just want you all to know that your concerns are not falling on deaf ears. I will say that don't think that what you see on that road is what you're supposed to get, because it's not. The road restoration part of this job has barely begun, and it's been bogged down now because of earlier delays have now pushed us into weather, winter weather, which is causing more delays. So I guess that's probably the best way I can kind of preface where we're at. But I'm certainly interested and, you know, hearing your thoughts, your concerns, your comments, your questions.
I would like to point out one other thing. One of the first items in the contract was stated, and I quote, time is of the essence. That was in the contract, one of the first items. That was one thing we were stressing, so that they started on time and got it done before winter. So, at this time, I'd like to talk to you about your comments. So, ma'am, would you please identify yourself?
Sure. My name is Chris Rook. I live on Ruppel with my mom, and I've spoken a few times to you guys. I think my frustration lies mainly in the fact that there really was only one option for a contractor. At the outset, knowing that this project was going to be delayed by the contractor who wasn't even planning on getting started on time.
But we didn't know that, though.
We didn't. Okay, well, I'm sure you didn't, because you wouldn't have agreed to do it with him, but you only had one option. There wasn't a backup plan. And so, in that essence, I feel a little frustrated with the grant or the process behind getting the contractor initially. And then I also think, I'm just speaking for myself, that we are very well aware that that road is not what it should be. And we also knew that before the cranes and everything got there. We knew that. But at this point, with the weather the way it is, and with the fact that all of this tonnage of equipment has gone down a disrepaired road already. We have been able to see the layers of the asphalt or whatever is on that road that have degenerated underneath the top layer. Basically, just unfortunately unseen now, even on the nicer parts of the road that we know it, are just like cracked underneath. So I think my concern is that even if we go through the process of patching what we see now that needs to be patched, that there's some really deeply unseen things that are now we're at risk on that road with. And we hadn't really had a plan to pave it ourselves. Obviously, you know, if we could, we would. But that's something that I think I'm here to ask you guys what the end result will be. I've been told not to put the cart before the horse, so I won't. And I hear you loud and clear on everything about the time framing. But those are my two points. That's it.
And I've already lost a home.
Identify yourself.
Oh, Brooke. Elsie. I lost a home in an earthquake and seeing roads go around my home. And if they're not repaired properly from below and up, then they're just going to crumble. And, you know, they were very courteous workers. I don't know if the new owner was or whatever, but they were very courteous. But I have the big cinder block house, the big street. And though, well, I thought that my windows were going to go sometimes because of the heavy equipment coming up and down. My house was shaking, which of course brought that kind of little more PTSD than calmly. But I am very concerned about what Chris was talking about. It just can't be superficial talk because it is much worse than what it used to be.
Ma'am?
Kimberly Miller, 3580 Rupel Avenue. We now have a large pond in front of our house because they've disrupted how the water drained off the river. And I know it's hard to tell, but we can because we're in the middle of the pond. So are my neighbors, Josh and Kathy Harding. And so there's multiple issues with how they have treated the road in the construction phase. Not only did they cut up the east side and then they went across, so we're now going to have about 36 speed bumps if you just repair those, but they crumbled what was already there that was, you know, still servicing us fairly well. So if you look at the edges where they cut along the east side, it has crumbled and cracked to such a degree. I was quoted before the project started that they were only going to pave about 3% of the road. Well, they've now damaged about 40% of the road with all of that equipment, with all of the cutting that they did, even crossing. It's ridiculous. So I want some assurances that something is going to, you guys have penalties rolling. I know these liquidated damages. Some of those maybe need to roll into fixing what's going on with our street. It's untenable stuff right now. So we're getting huge puddles. We're getting gravel everywhere. We got rocks everywhere. We're crumbling. My fear is you're going to go through and you're going to pave those ones where you went across the road, but they crumbled the edges of them. So it's not going to be enough. We're going to have a really serious issue on the street in perpetuity until something else happens. And that's not us. We didn't do that. That's something that's been caused by a giant piece of equipment going up and down the street multiple times. And yes, my house also was shaking. It's really a concern for all of us. And I realize nothing can be done now with asphalting, but we'd like a plan getting put in place. We want to see a plan laid out for how they're going to do it and when they're going to do it.
Kimberly, is the pond not draining because there's a berm from the scraping?
Yes.
I went out and dug a trench today, so it can at least relieve it. But eventually, it's higher on the roadside, so I mean, I can dig deeper and deeper. But I mean, I got rid of some of it.
Yeah, I am puzzled about the drainage. I really am. You know, I mean, if nothing else, you've got 3 or 4 foot deep trenches that are now gravel instead of potentially paved over with asphalt, which would have been a more impervious surface for it to drain. I do know that I went over there after I talked to you. I do see the berm. I think one of the things I'm confused by is it looks like all of the lots on the east side of the road are higher in elevation than on the west. So I'm a little puzzled how water ever drained in that direction off the road anyway. But I do know that there's a swale down there that I think probably played a part. And they did go in and they did provide more of a gully for the water to flow that way. I drove to Ruppel today thinking about the water. And of course, today wasn't a good example because the river was over the top of the road. As far as the drainage, I'm puzzled on why what we did made such a difference, just because I can see the property on the east side of the road is already higher in elevation, and I'm not sure what a berm would have done versus something like this if it's already higher. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we went there and we looked at that really closely, and we were really puzzled why, what has changed to cause that just in that area.
Steve Miller.
Yeah.
So anyways, where they put those 2 meter hookups right there,
yeah,
they filled all that in with gravel, which raised that area right there. I'm the guy that dug that trench all the way down. And
I saw it.
And that, yeah, it drained that whole area.
So where those meter boxes were now, what, Steve?
Yes.
What you're saying, Steve, is where those meter boxes are now was a natural drainage point.
Right.
And once those meter boxes were installed,
that holds the water.
Okay. Well, we'll take a look at that. I wasn't sure exactly how what the land contours in that area were before, but I do see a depression there.
Right.
And maybe we just need to lower those meter boxes a little bit and not put quite as much gravel in the trench lines as they did. We'll definitely check into that. In terms of, I'll be honest with you, this notion of liquidated damages and what they might be able to be used for to help offset some of the inconvenience of the folks that live on Ruppel.
Or mitigate the damage.
Or mitigate the damage.
That's what we want.
Yeah. Well, we just, you know, we'll have to, in principle, my opinion is, and of course it's a board decision, but my opinion is that sounds reasonable. The only question is these are SDC dollars, and any SDC dollars not spent remain SDC dollars, and you can't use those for road work. SDC dollars are system development charges that everybody pays.
We don't have a whole lot of wiggle room on how those funds can
The only other thing we could do legally is to amend the budget. We could amend the budget to take other money.
Let's get a look at it.
Yeah, potentially. We still, you know, as a public entity, we have a lot of laws about how we can spend our money and what our revenue streams are and what we can use that money for. But we'll certainly take a look at it. And in terms of the road, a few weeks ago we met with representatives from the county. The county has jurisdictional authority over the road. The county is the agency that gave us the road construction permit. The county doesn't own the road. This is a private private access road. I think local access road.
The county does own it, right? They just don't want it.
They actually don't. They have jurisdiction over it, but they don't own it.
What that means is essentially these folks own it.
I think what it means is the state of Oregon.
Is that what it does?
It's not a state highway. But I believe it means the state of Oregon owns it, but the county has jurisdiction over it. And as taxpayers, we do own it.
Well, there's a lot of roads around PC that are labeled that way. And I think it goes back to when the town was really plotted. The lots, you know, actually met in the middle of the road. So it is a complicated...
The county made a decision many years ago in their budget when the timber dollar income dropped so dramatically. The county commissioners made a decision at that time that we didn't have funds in the county to maintain all of the roads at the level we've been maintaining them. So they identified what are now called local access roads, which means the county has jurisdiction over how things are done, but not financial responsibility or to do it. So local access roads are not maintained by the county, but they call out the route. Originally they were, until that decision to identify local access roads, and those roads were taken out of the county maintenance. There have since been a number of them, and some here in PC, of community groups, small neighborhoods, whatever, that formed local improvement districts so that everybody that's affected, and this happened up on PC Heights, I think, one time years ago, where the folks got together and decided that they would put money in of their own. Then they went to the county and petitioned the county for a contribution for a portion of what the bid was to get the whole thing, the whole job done. And then there was an agreement with funds coming from two or three different places. I can't remember those details. But that's the value of a local improvement district.
Yeah, and I have to say, we are the only access to the
So there are other parties other than residents that might have an interest financially in it.
Well, and I did want to say that, you know, because the county is the jurisdictional authority, as I said, they were the ones that issued the road construction permit. We have an obligation to restore the road to their standards. And that was one reason that we wanted to bring them out and walk the road and talk to them, is because we knew this was going to be a difficult thing with Ruppel. When you start with a road that looks like Ruppel, it's hard to get a good measure of what it was to begin with versus what it is now. I'll give you an example. This was a brand new paved road that we just tore up to install a new water line. Well, we would know exactly how to restore that and what the expectations would be. Ruppel is much more difficult in that regard, and that's why we brought the county out to talk to them, because usually the county just writes a couple of requirements in their permit, and you just run with that, and there's very little question about it. So we will restore it to the county standards. The county has to sign off on the work that's done. They have to give final approval. And so I do want to say that it's the county who makes that call in terms of what will be accepted in terms of the county's point of view. They're not making the call for you, but we're very sensitive to the issues at play here, and we will do our best. It's difficult to know what beyond what the county requires that we might be able to do, but the county's requirement for the road may not meet your muster either.
What Do we not, is there not language in the contract that says that we have, that Earthworks has to return the road to the condition it was in when it was started?
Yes, it's and this is the general rule. You don't have to improve the road, but you have to restore it to its original condition. Again, that's a hard thing to measure or to pin down with a road like Rubel.
Possibly.
But that is the standard.
Who was the, when the county came out, who that was, what gentleman was that that you and Bill met, that you walked the road?
That was one of their engineering techs. It wasn't the public works director. It was Jasper Lind.
Does he work for the road department, or?
That's all he does.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you're saying that they've damaged it more, the under layer, and perhaps the county needs to know that, and it probably should come from you, because you know, you're the residents, you know what it was before, and what they've done now with heavy equipment, and now they've damaged it. So I would think the public works director needs to know that. So I would certainly, if I was in your shoes, I'd certainly be giving them a call or write them a letter.
Okay, what about a plan and a timeline for when this is
going to
be
done? Boy.
Well, I can tell you that in the latest letter that we received from the contractor, he's, I believe, projecting... he projected a date in that letter, and I believe that it is, well, final, we achieved substantial completion on 12/14/23, and final completion is expected by 1/19. That seems pretty ambitious compared to what we've seen now. That's 10 days away. I think that my suggestion is we wait and see. If this occurs, and once it occurs, we see what the results are, and then we move on from there. As I say, the county will not approve this until it is approved to their standards. So, in terms of a plan, our plan is that we have to wait for the contractor to get this job finished, hope the liquidated damages that are accruing is incentive for him to do so. And if he calls out 1/19, this is the first time since the contract started, I've seen what could be considered a hard and fast date for that. So
10 days to find asphalt.
Yeah.
The weather the way it is, we know that's not going to happen.
But that's neither here nor there.
Is dumping a bunch of asphalt down and then rolling it over it, which doesn't address the damage, you know, the real damage down underneath.
That's why the county needs to know.
Yeah, the county will have to assess that. They have the expertise to do that more than we do. I can tell you, you know, depending on how far you go down, you know, it's difficult to answer that, because you could make that claim about the whole road, and then the expectation would be was that the whole road gets paved, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to happen.
We realize that that's a tough nut to crack, but it's also what's needed. And if this contractor had been a little bit more on the spot and had this done by now, and maybe the water issues are attributing to the poor integrity of the road currently, still, constantly. And it's interesting to hear the wait and see approach. I think for us, and maybe I'm speaking just for myself, I think we would just like to hear a little bit more of a plan. If it doesn't happen, instead of waiting to see what happens, what will happen if it doesn't happen? And so I think that I've been feeling that way all along from the moment he was late starting.
Well, what I can tell you is that we can't offer to do it ourselves and then to go after the contractor for reimbursement. And I think I mean, I just don't see how we could do that. We don't have the equipment. Our limitations to contract it out would be we'd face the same challenges we are in getting the work done this time of year anyway. You know, what would you like to hear us say?
Well, I would like to hear a plan of, it, even if it doesn't happen right now because of the weather, that there is still a plan in action where we're going to know that eventually that the road will not only be drivable, but we won't be questioning what's happened underneath what we already know is a problem road. So I think we're not looking for an overnight fix either. We realize, guys, we know that you needed to put that fire main in our street, right? Yeah. We're the ones that are
it
benefiting from this.
And so, the fire hydrants,
you know, right?
I've been waiting for somebody to say those words for months now.
Yeah, we drive by and we all just go like this. Yeah. You know?
Awesome. Well, and the other thing that John put in place in this project, which was I thought was very, very smart, was he went ahead and ran the lines in the meter boxes, not the meter, to the unoccupied lots.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if the road ever did get paved, you come along and like on Sunset, every time there's a new house, you have to cut across the road,
right,
put the water line across, and repave it. And that's why they're all the little zebra stripes.
Sir, do you have a comment?
Just a statement. I will say some of the lids from those new meter boxes float.
Yes.
Oh.
And they were cruising the road today.
Is that right? What? Oh, you had a river crossing that road today.
Yeah,
yeah, the whole.
Not only that, those two lots that are owned by the Harrigan Air people, those two lots will never be occupied because they're on wetlands.
Oh, is that right? I've got them as a tax lot, so I assume that it, someday they could be buildable.
What?
Well,
but those things can change. They weren't wetlands 30 years ago.
Which ones you guys put in with that? Is it the meat with that, where they read the
automatic?
Those float too. They come up out of the ground and they're laying out the sensors.
Yeah, well, we may have to somehow figure out how to replace those with steel lids. The only question is they aren't really. You can't find those cut with the cutout for the radio unit like you can the plastic ones, but that's good feedback. I think that that's something we could fix. You know, I'll be honest with you. From my perspective, our immediate plan is to go through the legal avenues to hold the contractor responsible for the work that they've got to do. Our plan is to restore the road to Tillamook County standards, and that's something I can promise you. And their standards are relatively high. I don't think they're going to cover every pothole and everything that you guys might be worried about. But I get a little nervous about talk about what's happening 6 inches under the road because, you know, it's difficult to know that. And you can't fix that without grinding down all the existing asphalt and repaving. And you guys, that's not going to happen. I mean, I promise you. I mean, we can't afford it. It's not our role. I mean, we spent $550,000 on just this pipeline for this one road. If we had to start paving every road, we'd never be able to do the work we need to do. And that's why, you know, this is kind of in the county's purvey. It's in the county's hands. I will tell you that we'll do our best to address all your issues, but I'm still skeptical that we're going to make everybody in this room happy. But we're going to do our best to make sure our contractor lives up to his obligations. We're going to live up to our obligations, and what I hope is when all this is said and done, that you'll look at it and you'll see a road that's in much better shape than it is today. There may be areas that are worse than it was when we began, but I promise you there'll be areas that are better than when we began. And I think you pointed out one time, Sean, is when you start with a pothole like this, and now because of the work it's like this, how do we restore a pothole to this size? You can't. And you've got so many potholes on that road that you can't even really look at it one pothole at a time. But I guess that's the best way I can answer your questions and concerns. I'll invite the board to speak up about it as well. You know, our goal from the beginning was to minimize uncertainty and inconvenience by our customers on Ruppel. I've been writing you guys letters for a year and a half now, trying to get out in front of this, to communicate with you, so that you can plan your lives, you can make plans for your property. And the way this has turned out was not the way any of us here wanted it to.
When you met with Bill and the county, what was the expectation at that time for returning the road to its original condition? When you met the other day, what did the county express to you and Bill was their expectation of getting that road brought up to standards?
Well,
I mean, are they just going to back a couple of dump loads of gravel and call it good?
Well, there were some areas of the road that will have gravel added. Nothing more, but these are parts of the road that were mainly dirt with deep potholes that would collect water. So some areas will be graveled. Many of the areas will be paved. I'll tell you, every manhole that is sticking up this high in the road, that manhole's not sticking up that high because of the water line we put in, but we're going to make sure the county wants us to ease those transitions around those manholes, even if they had nothing to do with the work that was done. So I can tell you that those transitions will be eased. You mentioned the crumbling. I believe that they were out there and recut those trench lines.
But they're still crumbling along where they recut them, and it's all crumbled up. So you can see that they just come in and fill in just where they cut.
Yeah.
It's crumbling all along the edge of it.
Yeah. Well, I think that they went in and recut those with the intent that at least the any additional crumbling that occurred due to their heavy equipment might be now mitigated, because now there's straighter, cleaner edges. That doesn't account for all the traffic of you guys driving over it, certainly, and so that should be a factor. But I do know that everywhere there's a trench line, we'll be patched, we'll be paved, and it should extend to the point where any of that should be mitigated. I'm aware of some driveways that have kind of crumbled. Those are going to be taken care of. A lot of individual private property, you know, they had to cut the water meter into their driveway because that's where it was. Those will all be restored. So other than pointing to some of the spots like the manholes and saying, yeah, we got to do something here, even though it wasn't necessarily caused by the project, I think they graded some of the potholes at the entrance a little bit. They aren't all the way gone, but I think they've been reduced. But these speed bumps, no? Well, I can tell you that these speed bumps shouldn't, I mean, we've done this a long time. Every time we do a new tap on a new development, we got to cut a trench in the road and we got to tap the pipe. And we've got a lot of experience with this, and I can tell you that if that gravel is compacted correctly, I've received a compaction report on it, and the compaction is quite good with the work they've done. You should not see those fail. You just shouldn't see it. So I think that the paving of the trench lines and some of this additional work, they put a bunch more gravel down on the extreme south end, which I think has improved the road. It's not pavement, it's not asphalt, but it's improved the road down there. These are some of the things that the county mentioned to us about things they'd like to see. We put a lot of gravel down on the south end because the county wanted to see it. Going to take care of these manhole interfaces because the county wants to see it. They cut the trenches wider because the county asked them to. So those are the types of things we've seen.
What about the east side of the road? Where they, I mean, it's...
And it's just a pathway for the heavy equipment, and it's just becoming like a ride.
Well, the east side of the road is where the main pipeline is laid. So my understanding is they're supposed to patch that with asphalt. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the job.
Yeah, it may not have been perfect before, but it's just, they've just worn it out.
Yeah. Well, as I said, mentioned to some of you, it's not uncommon for when you do a below ground utility work like this, it's not uncomfortable to, or it's not unusual to make the road worse before it gets better. In fact, it's very likely going to happen. But we're at that worst part, and now we got to get to the better part.
It is nice to look out the window and see a fire hydrant.
Well, thank you.
That's property and life. Safety.
It is.
Your insurance company likes those hydrants too.
Right. Although we're flooding right now, but well, there's give and take.
You know, we could all live in Arizona, but we like here.
Well, that was item number 10. If there are no other comments, go to item 11, which is chair director comments. And I like just to say, thank you all very much for being here. You're welcome to be here anytime we have a meeting. And this was a good meeting because you are here. Normally we don't have many guests. You gave us a couple of ideas that we normally wouldn't see. So I really encourage you to come to more of our meetings. It can be a little dull sometimes, but... because it's procedural, but there's always some interesting things. It's funny, when you get a lot of smart people in one room working on a particular idea, it all comes out better. That's always been my experience. So thank you again for coming.
And you guys know how to get a hold of me.
Any other director have any comments?
Yeah, I do.
Sean?
I'd just like to say, I mean, I think, you know, these people took their time to come and tell us their concerns tonight, and nothing that I heard makes me think that that needed to come out of liquidated damages. Everything that I heard makes me think that that's just a part of putting the road back to the condition that it was in when we started the project. So, you know, I don't hear anything that I heard tonight that can't be solved by returning the road to the condition that it was in before we started on this project.
And that's the universal guideline for this.
And I think these people are the experts at, you know, something's crumbling underneath that wasn't crumbling before, they're going to know about it.
Well, they see it every day. Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
I'm good. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Are you guys closing or are we dismissed?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
You can go anytime you want. We're not done yet.
We're finished commenting.
It is now 6:48 p.m. Meeting adjourned.